This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Political relationships between the U.S. and Russia are tense at the moment, to say the least. But scientific collaboration between the two countries, that's a different story. Collaboration is on the rise, particularly when it comes to the Arctic. Earlier this year, the U.S. and Russia were among eight parties who signed an Arctic Science Agreement. And this week, the International Arctic Science Committee is meeting at the Russian Academy of Sciences in Moscow to discuss next steps. Joining me now to talk about that is Paul Berkman. He's professor of practice in science diplomacy at Tufts Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Heather. It's nice to talk with you again as well.
All right. So scientists often collaborate across political boundaries. We often hear about international teams of scientists that, you know, accomplished something or discovered something. So what does this Arctic Science Agreement commit us to that we might not get otherwise?
This science agreement, it's called the Agreement on Enhancing International Arctic Scientific Cooperation, demonstrates just in the title that science has been productive and active, influential, and that the nations, including the United States and Russia, see importance in enhancing that collaboration. And so, in a sense, it is an opportunity for nations to use and continue to use science as a tool of diplomacy, as well as a framework to collect and analyze and utilize information in ways that contribute to informed decision-making.
The talks this week are specifically about international research taking place or that could take place in the Russian Arctic. How contentious is that?
It's not so much that it's specifically or only in the Russian territory. The Arctic Science Agreement recognizes that, in effect, in the center of the Arctic is the Arctic Ocean. And the Arctic has largely been dominated by ice, water in a frozen state, historically covering the entire Arctic Ocean with sea ice that in many cases was many meters thick. And during the last 30 years, during a period observed by satellites, we've seen the Arctic Ocean open up. And so, in a sense, with the center of the Arctic being an ocean surrounded by continents, the opportunity is to look at the Arctic in a pan-Arctic context. And so it's not one nation or another in specific, but all nations together. And an important component of the Arctic is Russia. Russia occupies under sovereign jurisdiction nearly half of the Arctic. And so in the sense of looking at the Arctic in a pan-Arctic context all the way around the Arctic Ocean, the challenge is to have open, effective access to collect information, to utilize historical records, and to share this information, which benefits each nation individually and all collectively.
My guest is Paul Berkman. He's professor of practice in science diplomacy at Tufts Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. We're talking about the Arctic Science Agreement. The Arctic is warming faster than any other part of the planet. I mean, you've already alluded to the fact that the Arctic Ocean used to be mostly ice, and now we've actually got ocean there to contend with. So climate research has to be part of this agreement. Given what we've seen from the Trump administration so far in terms of attitudes toward climate change, climate policy, and climate research, how has the U.S. delegation been handling that issue in particular?
So you're asking about climate, which in a sense brings the discussion to a global scale. The concept of climate is a planetary scale concept. So Earth has a climate, Mars has a climate, Jupiter has a climate. Every planet in our solar system has its own climate. And so really, when we're talking about climate, we're talking about planetary scale solutions, problems, perspectives. If we look at the 20th century, we had for the first time in human history the concept of world wars. These weren't regional wars. They weren't continental wars. They were world wars. And in a sense, the challenge that has existed since the 20th century is that we live in a globally interconnected civilization. And if we think about that in context, the 20th century is one century. In the history of our civilization, as reflected by calendars, for example, the oldest calendars on Earth are around 6,000 years old, which is 60 centuries. So one century out of 60 centuries is like 1 year out of a lifespan of 60 years. And in effect, in a practical sense, we're just in our infancy in understanding how to operate on a planetary scale. And like infants, make mistakes, you bump into things, you cry about things. And in a sense, this is part of the discussion about climate. The climate really is thinking on a planetary scale. And how do we, as a collection of nations and peoples and cultures, operate on a planetary scale with hope and inspiration for future generations? And it isn't so much any one political party or one political moment. We're talking about operating on a planetary scale. And the challenge is to think in terms of the time and space dimensions of a planet. And just to further put things in context, the children that are born today will be alive in the 22nd century, which means that the parents and children and the grandparents of those children, their personal legacy, their responsibility is to think across the 21st century. And so one of the challenges that we face as a globally interconnected civilization is to recognize that there is a continuum of urgencies that not only operate over political and security timescales, dealing with the risks of political, economic, or cultural instability, but we have challenges as a civilization to think about solutions over generations. And I think that may help to mitigate some of the rancor that exists in discussions about what one administration does or doesn't do.
The idea of operating on a planetary scale of this global cooperation, of thinking long term. I want to come back to this particular administration and how this administration has been handling issues of science policy and global policy, even diplomacy. There's been a lot of talk about the lack of science advisors within the Trump administration, that there are still many unfilled positions. There are still many unfilled high-level positions at the State Department. But Secretary Rex Tillerson does have his own science advisor. Do you get the sense that the attitude toward science is different within the State Department than it is more broadly within the Trump administration?
So Vaughn Tarikian, who is a close friend, was the fifth science and technology advisor to the Secretary of State. The first was under Madeleine Albright. And Vaughn left the State Department in July. That position, as you've identified, has not been replaced yet.
His name is still listed on the State Department website as the science advisor to the Secretary of State, but he hasn't actually been in that position for some time.
Since July. And in a sense, the questions that you're asking about this Arctic science agreement represent some of the challenges that exist within the current U.S. administration. The agreement itself was signed by Rex Tillerson, U.S. Secretary of State, as well as Foreign Minister of Russia, Sergei Lavrov, along with the foreign ministers of the other six Arctic states, plus Greenland and the Faroe Islands from Denmark. And so the agreement effectively was under the radar. It was introduced, it was signed in May of 2017. It was led by a task force with the United States and Russia as the co-chairs of this task force throughout the period that had been the U.S. chairmanship of the Arctic Council. And so in a sense, the use of science has different levels of action within the U.S. administration at the moment. But the reality is that science is fundamental to every decision that the government makes in every area. And I can appreciate that any administration is coming in with a sense of intuition and responsibility to try and do the best they can for the welfare of the nation. Now, because these are political discussions, there are different perspectives as to what people think is a right path. But in a very basic way, independent of the political discussion, independent of the agendas and the advocacy that goes behind those agendas, the information that is necessary for decision-making comes from rigorous methodologies across the natural and the social sciences. And in a sense, the Arctic Science Agreement is a case study. It's an example. It's a shining light of how science can be used as a tool of diplomacy, navigating between allies and adversaries alike.
Paul Berkman is the professor of practice in science diplomacy at Tufts University's Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. Paul, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Heather. It's a pleasure and an honor.